What's up, everybody? What's up, y'all? How everybody doing today? Nah. Come on. We here to get some knowledge today. How's everybody doing today? That's right. My name is Jacques Morel. I'm a host and digital producer, and I am so happy to be joined by Barilon Diaz, the VP of A&R Interscope Records and the founder of Be Heard Management. Can we please make some notes? I know. But I had a whole spiel that I was working on, so sometimes, you know, we kind of write. But and the VP of A&R Interscope Records, can we please make some notes to Barilon, please?
Hi, everybody.
We got Tariq Sharif. He's the co-founder of Rolling Loud. Can we please make some noise there? And we got Rob Gibbs. He's the head of music at ICM Partners and the first black man to lead a music agency at a talent agency, period. So shame that it took this long, but we're here. This is Artists Stop Trying to Get Booked. Basically, we're here to give y'all the tools so you're not spamming them, so they can start spamming you, you know? You want them reaching out to you, not the other way around, because that's the best way to ensure success. And I think the best way for this to work, everybody in here is trying to get some knowledge of them. If you're an artist or a manager, can you just raise your hand real quick? I just want to see, boom, we're all here to learn something. We're gonna have some questions at the end of the show. You'll be able to have 15, 20 minutes. Make sure your questions are short, so after all, everybody gets some time to do it, and you're gonna wanna walk up to that mic to do it in the process. But to get started, I think we should take about 60 seconds with each of y'all to kind of introduce yourself, give you bona fides, tell us how you got here. That's why people that aren't clued in can get clued in.
Hey, everybody. My name is Barilon. How are you? Hey. More energy. Okay. Well, if I told y'all how I got here, we'll be here for a whole entire day. But just a brief, I'm 27 years old from Uptown, New York, Dominican. I hustle my ass off, still hustling my ass off to keep my position and my title. I've worked with every artist. One of my first artists I signed was Polo G. Then other artists I've worked with is DaBaby. I did Moneybagg's last album. I A&R'd the whole thing, Gangsta's Pain. I A&R'd ESTG's last project. Who else have I worked with? Little Papa. I signed Moray, who has the record Quicksand. And I manage Babyface Ray. I just started managing a year ago. I was like, man, I'm watching everybody do this. I can do this with my eyes closed. Let me try to do it with an artist that I believe in, and the shit is working. He's finally booking us. So it's working. So, you know, I'm just happy to be here. I'm young, I'm fresh in the industry. I haven't been in it for a long time, but I feel like I'm always learning every day. So I cannot wait to share everything I'm learning with you guys today.
Yeah. Tariq.
Yo. My name is Tariq Sharif. It's pronounced Tariq for everybody who's been calling me Tariq my whole life. Not talking about it. But I ain't choose it, but I love it. Basically, I started with my partner Matt. He's like one of my best friends since fourth grade. We started booking concerts in college. I just was like trying to get in the rap industry. I hated promoters. I was like, I hate these club guys. Fuck these guys. But I wanted to get in the music industry. Didn't know how to get in. Didn't have the prerequisites to go to music school. Didn't want to wait through that route. Saw booking shows as my way in. And now fast forward to today, you know, we got the biggest hip hop festival in the world. And we do a bunch of other concerts throughout the year. And also manage art. I got to do what my original goal was, which was get into managing artists, not just doing concerts. So I've helped guide some careers and looking to guide some more. And that's where I'm at today.
Yeah, let's make some noise. Come on.
Good afternoon, everybody. I guess I'm kind of the OG up here in a sense. I've been in the agency business for 23 years or something like that. I started many, many years ago. Started as an intern at a small boutique agency, worked my way up to just building relationships. And I always hate to use the word networking. I actually built relationships. I think you should take that and use that and make sure that it's not just networking, it's relationships. And so I ended up building a great relationship with a mentor that I've worked alongside him for 20-something years now, which is crazy. he gave me opportunity and spent 7 years at CAA, which is one of the biggest agencies in the agency business, and currently I'm at ICM Partners. Been there for 15 years, and CAA just bought ICM, so we'll see how that all works out. It's crazy how things go full circle, but been doing the touring thing for a very long time, and you know, represent J. Cole is one of my biggest clients who I've worked with from since 2009. So we talk about journey and you know, telling the story, you know, there's a lot behind that to where that artist is today. So, and amongst many other artists. So that's it.
Can you please make some noise for our panel real quick? Barreline, I think we should start with you. When it comes to branding, even from day one, how important is it for an artist to know who they are so that's why they could be treated the right way and set the best blueprint for their own success?
Well, like he said, people DM me all day, like that's all they do. And I think it's crazy. So, you know, a lot of people call my phone, they're like, this artist is hot. And I'm like, what makes them so hot? It's 1,000 artists here. What makes them stand out? So I'm very particular of who I meet, because I feel like when an artist comes to a label or has a meeting with an executive, you kind of like build up this, you know, they're like, okay, I met with this executive, I'm here. So very particular. I don't really take meetings with artists unless I'm like, I want to sign them, right? So sometimes you take meetings with artists and like their music is amazing, everything, but like their head is like looking at the floor, or like they're just confused. It's like they're selling something, but when you meet them, it's not them. And I think that to be the best artist you possibly can, you need to walk in the room and own that shit. I need to see you, and you could be with a group of 10 people, and I'm like, that's the artist right there. So I think that when I see an artist, I want to see a superstar from the beginning, from day one. I just signed a female artist. I haven't announced it yet. When she goes into the room, everybody loves her. Like, everybody just looks at her. She doesn't even have the jewelry, none of that. And it's like, you could tell that she's a superstar. So I think that ownership of who you are as an artist is so important. I think from day one, you need to know who you are, your vision, your style, the way you rap. I feel like everybody wants to be the same now because of social media. Stop trying to be like everybody else. That shit is whack. I don't care what nobody tells you.
Yes.
Try to be like nobody else. Like, I met an artist the other day, and they were like, I want to put this person as a feature, this person. And he was telling me, like, Future, these huge artists. This is an artist that nobody knows. This was the first time in a long time I've taken a meeting, and I'm taken away. This artist is amazing, one of the best artists I've heard in a long time, and we're trying to sign him. But I'm like, why are you so focused on getting these big features? He's like, because I want everybody. I said, you need to do the work. Do the work yourself. And people, once they hear this, it's over. So I feel like just be you, stay true to yourself, your image, and you, there's nothing you can't do. Like, anybody could be the next superstar. You just got to be willing to do the work. Stop being lazy. Like, stop doing that shit. I hate artists that get comfortable. Y'all get a couple views, and y'all think y'all popping. Do work. So just do the work. Market yourself. Find out what your brand is. And if you have people that was in your team, that somebody that's the cameraman, and he's coming up, have him everywhere with you. And he don't even pay him. Everybody come up together and build a brand and have people creatively create you. And just market yourself. It's so easy if you have a team. And find out who's hot, too, online on Instagram. Like, what people that you know in your school are here. Who's the next producer here? Get beats from them and just start working, connecting with people.
It's funny you mentioned that, because Tariq, when you're booking, Rolling Loud has a history of having artists that come on at 2 or 3 o'clock, and then a couple years later, they're on at 6, and then next thing you know, they're on at 9. Like, kind of like Rico Nasty. Her earliest year, she's doing at 3 o'clock, and then she becomes 6 and 7 o'clock. How does a solid brand help you tap them to know that, hey, we might be talking to this person at 8:30, but right now we're going to put you at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, I think, like, branding is everything, because, like, brand scales into any venue size, right? So like, if you have a real brand, it might be a small brand, but I could identify that brand could fill up 100-seat venue, right? 100 tickets, just like if it's a product, like Nabisco cookies, right? Like, I know like 100 people in this market fuck with these cookies, and it's nationwide 100. So I can plan for 100 and I can build on 100, right? So with us, it's like we apply that to music. It's like I'm not so concerned with how many hits you got or if like you got the hit right now. Like that's cool and it's important. Don't get me wrong. We all want to put out diamond records. Don't get me wrong. But it's much more important to do that groundwork, I believe, because if you chase the hit and all you do is a hit, you're here today, gone tomorrow. As quick as you pop up, you're out of here. But if you did the work on branding and you establish your brand and you you built that step one, and then you take those people on that journey, those people, like you said, at that early set, they go into the next set and they're like, hey, there's more people this time. Hey, we lit. Like, they feel a part of your shit. They see your numbers going up. Like, fans will be like, I remember when I was one of 100 people liking your posts. Now you got 1,000 people liking your posts. I remember when 1,000 were liking them. Now 10th, that boom, 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 boom. Like, you got to build that. Stop chasing what she said. Like, give me the feature. Make that relationship with Future, motherfucker. Like, or why else? Or else Future is gonna give you a throwaway if you get it, and he's gonna tax the fuck out of you, and then you're never gonna recoup.
And then you could get it. Like, you know, it's crazy that you say that, because when you don't know an artist, you gotta pay a feature. Like artists like Lil Durk and Lil Baby, you can't just get a feature from them. They getting money, so they know they could just let some. They don't need the money, so when they organically fuck with you, that's a swap. You don't gotta pay them. It's they doing it off the love, the strength. You're going to blow your whole artist budget on a feature. How about if it's... I've seen records where you do a feature with those artists. Sometimes a feature may be too big for a new artist. You don't even have no real fans. So, and the artist is not going to promote it. They're just going to take the check. But when they organically fuck with you, they're going to post you on your page. Like, my artist, Rob49, we just shut down New Orleans. Like, shut down. Like, they haven't seen that since Cash Money. Baby posted it. Baby came to New Orleans. He showed him love because he organically fucks with the record, and he fucks with Rob. If it was somebody else, he would have not been like, bro, I'm not going to New Orleans. Like, give me my money. Right. We ain't even doing a video. But when people organically fuck with your sound and you as a person, you're going to get everything you want from other. It's going to come to you. You don't got to chase it. Just do the work.
And Rob, how important is it when a solid brand is there? How does it make your job easier to kind of get the artists good deals, get them good shows and good placements?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Bearline, when she, her opening statement, you know, she ended it with like, Tariq is finally booking my artists, right? And that goes to the work that we're all talking about being put in and building and patience, right? And when Tariq mentions, you know, 100 people in markets across the country, you know, those are hard, what we call hard tickets in the touring world. And you've got to show that. And I spend a lot of time, I just take a step back. I had a call maybe about 3 weeks ago where an A&R called me and said, hey, why isn't my artist on Rolling Loud Miami? And I said, because your artist is not ready to be on Rolling Loud Miami. And he said, what do you mean? But so-and-so's on it. And I said, yeah. And that's fine that so-and-so's on it, but that artist is likely going to play at 1 o'clock when the gates open, and I don't know if that artist is ready or not. I know you're not ready. And I said, do you want me to call a favor into Matt or Tariq to get you on? I said, I will, but let's stand side stage when there's only 5 people out there and we're looking at each other, why are we here? I was like, so at the end of the day, it's about building something to play the festival at the right time. Sometimes, as Tariq knows, you get to a certain point, you're playing festivals for the bag. They pay good money. These guys pay some really good money. Or sometimes it's not about the money, but it's the right slot. You know, Tariq knows there's an artist we had play 3 Rolling Louds last year, and Tariq's a big fan of him, put him on the main stage. The manager and I talked about it. You know what? It was great. There was a lot of people out there, but he wasn't ready for that main stage. So what we did, we came back to Tariq, and we said for LA and New York, we want to make sure we're on the smaller stage at 8 o'clock or whatever it is down the way. And it came off way much better, you know, way better. Artist had a little bit of touring under his belt, and it just was a better experience. So I say all that to say it's about building and building your brand and telling a story of, you know, being able to sell hard tickets and that you're worthy to get on these festivals.
I want to comment on that. I also think it's about leaving, like, being cool and not getting paid. Like when we did, Babyface just did Jack Harlow's tour, everybody was like, y'all crazy. Why y'all going on tour with Jack Harlow? Like, you know, Babyface is from Detroit. We looked at it as an opportunity for him to gain a new fan base to get out there. Like, nobody, them people didn't know who Ray was. They knew the song Paperwork Party, but yeah. It wasn't about that. It was about gaining an experience, him seeing how it works on the road, him seeing how a real tour production is, him seeing that he don't want his vocals in the background because he sounds like shit because he can't breathe, right. And he's learning that. So when we go on tour, we can't have that. We didn't have any ears. It's a learning experience. And everything is not about money. You got to leave some money on the table. We wasn't getting nothing for Rolling Loud, but we was like, yep. We in that motherfucker. Right. Like, we don't care, you know? Yeah. And I feel like some artists, they get one record, they be like, why they don't want to pay me? Why they don't want to give me $15,000? Why they don't want to give me $100,000? Like, you don't even deserve that shit, bro. Right. Do the work. The money is going to come, I'm telling you. It's cool to leave money on the table sometimes. It's going to come.
So are we not paying?
Not that they're not paying. When you're just getting started, you ain't about to get $10,000 to, like, bro, no, you got to do the work, and it's okay. Like, do the work, the money is going to come. Like, if your vision is getting into the music industry for money, this is the wrong business for you. You got to do a lot of work.
It's a long road. Like, if you're trying to make money, there's a lot of things you can do in life if you want to make money quick. I just want to say I started doing this shit in 2010, and motherfuckers in this room know I was broke for a long time, bro. Like, long time. I'm about to cry about that shit. You know what I'm saying? Because it take like a minute. It's like some people get it quick. Like, cool. Not me, bro. That shit took a while. Like, yeah, the shows were big, but like we weren't profiting nothing, you know? So like, it takes time. So don't be discouraged when you're getting $500 a show. Don't be discouraged when you're getting $250 a show, $1,000 a show.
Or nothing.
Or you get opening for a tour for free. Whatever it is, like, it's all part of the plan. But I just want to, like, close in on the branding thing you said real quick, just because, like, I feel like you might be about to move on. Like, we didn't really touch on, like, how you could brand yourself. And I just want to say, like, the number one thing is to, like, know who you are as an artist or who your artist is as an artist. Define that music first. Like, you don't need to get caught up too much in, like, the identity shit before you experiment with the music some more, find your sound, but then hone in on that identity. That brand that you got, what makes you different? Create, like what she said, build that team, create the visuals around it. Create a fucking company. You're the CEO. Whatever, Nabisco, fucking McDonald's, Starbucks, is no different than Michael Jordan, is no different than Jay-Z, is no different than J. Cole. Like, all these are brands. That's number one.
And when you have that music, you got to expand it. Kind of like Benny said, last year's about branding, this year's about expanding. And the way to expand is through marketing. Can you talk to me about how important it is to be on the ground and having your sounds kind of take tangible reality in the space? So kind of like with DaBaby, a couple years ago, DaBaby was at South by Southwest, hustling hard on 6th Street like some of y'all are. And then he worked hard, he worked his ass off with the music, with you in tow, to kind of make himself one of the biggest artists on the planet. So tell me about how important it is to market the music that you're creating.
I think that when DaBaby started, he was just like hungry. Like, I hadn't seen an artist like that in a long time. Like, he did not stop working. Like, I swear to God, the first year we started working, I never stopped. His brother died, his father. Like, he had all these things that I never saw him pause or celebrate. It was just like work. We did SNL first year. This is huge for a new artist. BET Awards, everything. And it was just like he had a vision on what he wanted to look like. So, like, from his music videos, like, the Rougolds were like his homies, you know, and he created them to be now videographers that everybody wants to work with. So he gave them that style. His music, he was just talking shit and then adding these crazy ass videos that nobody has seen in a long time. But that was his niche. That's what made him a superstar, and his sound. And he stayed true to himself. He knew how to brand himself. He knew how he wanted to look. He was wearing fucking oversized overalls. People are like, who the hell is this guy? Like, but that was his brand, and that's what took him to the next level fast. And he stayed true to himself and his vision. So I think once an artist is true to their sound, like Tarek said, you could just develop on how you want to look. What is your niche? Why should people want to gravitate to you? Because it's like I said earlier, there's a million artists. What makes you stand out from other artists? Why should I sign you?
Tyler, can you tell me about the earliest days of Rolling Loud and getting the word out there and marketing that yourself?
Yo, I used to be like, hey, man, I got this hip-hop festival. You should check it out. It's like a bunch of rappers. We got Schoolboy Killer. People are like, man, what? I'm going to Coachella. I'm going to Ultra. I'm going to some other festival. We don't give a fuck about that. But I didn't. That's when I was like talking to outside the scene, right? So it's along the lines of branding. Identify your fan base, right? So we had been doing shows in Florida for 5 years. And I started noticing like some of the same people at certain types of shows, like an Action Bronson show had a lot of the same fans as a Currency show and a Big Sean show and a Wiz Khalifa show. But then the Underachievers and Denzel Curry and Rob Banks and et cetera, had similar fans. And all these different crowds of hip hop had the same fans. And we're like, let's book one show with all of them, right? But the marketing was always very grassroots, like, like we used to do the flyers and like that type of stuff, but more than anything it was about like building that viral thing and like catering to that fan base and like encouraging them to share it. So like we built community around the Rolling Loud brand, and it used to be like a couple hundred retweets, nothing crazy. Like we used to not have a 1.4 million Instagram followers. Like when Rolling Loud first started, we had couple that, like, you know, it was zero. When we launched Rolling Loud, we had another company. Rolling Loud had zero followers. So like when you launch an artist, you're gonna have zero followers. Like just pretend that you have zero followers right now. That's amazing. You could start there and build, because that's what we did. So same with like what you marketing your music, start with who you got, share with them the most compelling thing that you can. Sure, we can talk all day about spending ad money and trying to do all these but pay the digital marketing people, get academics posting about you with the little meme that's like, is so-and-so next to blow, or is he fire emoji or shit emoji?
That should be so corny.
Right? But like, motherfuckers think that's the ticket. But
and
it's like,
be like, YB's better.
Yeah. Yo, yo, if your shit fire though, like it's, I'm not saying it's not worth doing that stuff, but the most important part, everybody always wants to skip the steps, and it's like the most important step is like hone in on your product for your identifiable fan base, and that will grow.
Rob, when you're talking with these artists to kind of sketch out the marketing plan for the show, what does it look like?
Oh, man, I mean, it depends at what level, but obviously starting out, it's you know, again, to Bearline and Tariq's point, you know, it's finding the right tour, right, to get an artist experience who hasn't performed yet, right? Getting them on the right tour to open or what have you. If they're at a place where they have a decent enough buzz or demand, you know, we may go to small rooms and play 250 cap rooms on a $10, $15 ticket price and leave room for that artist to grow. We may play 10 markets, we may play 20 markets. It just really depends on, you know, where the demand is on that artist around the country, around the world, from a global perspective, because it's just not, you know, North America. There's a huge, you know, world out there of Australia and Europe and all those other territories. So, you know, it really just comes down to sitting down with the team, again, management, you know, label, everybody being in sync, publicists, to make sure when we go into a market or, you know, we're on tour with an act, that we're capitalizing, that we're doing, you know, some people say radio's not relevant anymore. It is still relevant, because in Kansas City, Missouri, they may still listen to radio and not Spotify or whatever on the way to work. You know what I mean? It's just, you never know. So you want to tap into all of those different outlets. But it comes down to just the team being in sync to take that artist to the next level.
And it's funny, Bearline, with respect to what you just said about playing in small rooms to kind of hone your practice. Bearline, I've seen you describe your management style as like you're the confidant, the therapist. You also sometimes are just downright parent, tell them this is not right or good. Like, how is it important for you to make sure the artist has a good act, something that people would actually want to play for, actually want to pay to see?
I was just telling my artist that's about to go on tour. And it's good that you said that, because when we were putting the routing together, I was like, yeah, I'm not about to set him up and put him in 1,000 cap rooms. I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be 500 so it could feel like tight. It's sold out. It looks good. Some people rather take a big check and have a whole half room empty, but then that venue is not going to want to book you again because you couldn't even fill it out. But when it comes to performance, it's like I was saying, like on Jack's tour, we learned so much. You were like, we need TV tracks. We don't want it to sound like that because we want people to really be like, damn, it was a good show. Like when I was in college, there was a bunch of artists that used to come to Syracuse, and I'm like, still to this day, I'm 27, I'm like, I never want to see them perform because it's just not good, you know. And I was talking to one of my good friends, Tanisha Scott. She's a big choreographer for like everybody. She's like, these girls nowadays, they take off their heels, they're not dancing. Like nobody wants to see that shit. People want to pay their money. So imagine you paying a $60 ticket and the artist is tired or lazy, or you could just tell they're not there. Like, I don't want to see that. So I think it's very important. Like, that's a part of your brand. You want people to go see the show and your production look good and you actually taking out the time to get to know your fans, you know? Like, so production and how an artist looks, like, artists need to go to the gym, work out, because if you're doing a 60 minute set, you can't be tired. People could see right through. They're like, yo, I went to this artist show. That shit was whack, bro. Yeah. They'll go see him. And it's word of mouth. That's how it starts. You don't want to book him. He's not good, this and that. So I think if you like your money, you like your checks, you got to do good work, because you ain't nothing without your fans. I'm sorry. These artists are nothing without fans. So if your fan is not happy, they're going to tell somebody else, and they nobody's going to want to come see you.
Tariq, when you are actually giving some people the chance of putting them early, are you sometimes seeing, okay, this person isn't necessarily ready for it yet, maybe we should kind of cool off on them a bit?
Are you saying when I watch?
Yeah, when you watch a set. Like, when you're watching, you know.
It's definitely happened a few times where I'm like, nah, they're not ready. Like, we made the wrong decision. You know what I mean? But for the most part, I like to think we make some of the right, a lot of the right decisions on who we're putting on the show. But at the same time, you know, it's between the time we announce and the show happening is a good 5-6 months. So we also, like, we take gambles on who's, like, we kind of see something in somebody. Because, like, what she said, it's like sometimes you just see the star power. And you see they've been building that buzz and they got that little thing going. It's like, man, I'm betting on that trajectory. And sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong, right? But yeah, sometimes I'm wrong.
And we see these tools are trying to make sure that he's never wrong here. So I hope y'all are taking notes. Rob, I want to talk about Cole's Down on a Dream Tour. Anybody in here go to J. Cole's Down on a Dream Tour? No. This is from way back when.
It was a dollar.
And the thing about that tour is that I really feel that tour is what kind of set Cole up to be a mega draw that he is today. And you said you've been working with him since 2009. Can you talk about sketching that out? And that was a risk in itself.
No, for sure. It was, first of all, you know, for all you managers and young artists, you know, that's a guy that just continues to bet on himself to this day. And that's how he's kind of built his whole career. So when he came up with the idea of Dollar and a Dream, he was like, listen, it's gonna be a dollar. I know I'm not gonna make any money. I'm actually gonna have to come out of my pocket to do this. And there was no sponsors, there was no nothing, but he knew what it would do for his brand and for his fans and that intimacy and, you know, being able to take those relationships. I think year two that we did it, you know, he brought Kendrick and Drake out the same night in LA, and we only had one show scheduled. That same night, he's like, bro, there's so many people outside, just add another show. And then he hit Drake up, was like, yo, you know, pull up. You know, he pulls up, Kendrick was the show before, so people were like, wait a minute, the first show, people come out and they're like, oh shit, we just saw Kendrick Lamar for a dollar, like this shit, like it was pandemonium. And then we had a second show, and then they get Drake, you know what I mean? Which it wasn't planned that way. It just kind of came together. But, you know, we ended up doing 11 cities, I think, on the first or second tour. I can't remember. But it was him investing in himself and betting on himself. At the end of the day, it wasn't about the money. It, you know, and clearly we could have charged $10 or whatever it was. He was like, no, and I don't want tickets. I want physical dollar bills that people actually collect at the door, and you pass your dollar because – just we're so transactional in credit cards and buying stuff online. He didn't want people to buy tickets online. It was like, just show up, pay your dollar. So that in itself was just something that, you know, I think for hip hop will go down in kind of history as kind of him being the first artist to do something like that. And it was connected to the music. And so it all kind of, you know, came together. Now it's tough to do it at this stage, even though he says he wants to do it at Madison Square Garden one day. Like,
that'd be fire.
$1 to just get into the garden, you know what I mean? Which we
that'd
have to figure
incredible.
It out.
But he'll just take a big financial loss.
Right.
For this.
But he don't care.
It's funny.
It's a great marketing scheme. Though.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Right.
With him saying he did 11 cities. Tarik, how important, it's not about the cities you go to, it's about the cities you go back to. And I'm sure that Cole has done shows all in those 11 cities again.
Yeah, for sure. No, you gotta build, man. Like, and you know, so you gotta be ready to do different size rooms on tour. Like, you might hit Irving Plaza in New York, but when you go to Columbus, Ohio, you need to downsize.
Right.
But doesn't mean you don't go back to Columbus, Ohio. You just got to do the work in Columbus, Ohio, right? So I think it's about just starting small and building. And that way you're always going to go back to any city that you go to. Also, like, right. Maybe don't go headline a city that you know you're going to flop in. Like,
right.
Even in a 100-cap room, just wait to go support somebody there.
Yep.
You know?
This is like a question that I was like, I really wanted to ask you. As a manager, work with Babyface Ray, a lot of times people are kind of coming up with their family, with their friends. But what about when it's time to cut some people off? When you got to say, hey, you're not really working for me anymore.
I get my ass everything. You know how many times I tell him, he come back, man, you was right. I said, no, nigga, I was telling you.
Yeah, so talk about telling your artist that, hey, sometimes, like, I know he's your best friend, but he's not doing it for you.
The homeboy business. That shit is, like, everybody can't come. It's okay to leave some people back, but if somebody's there, like, let's say you got a homie, and that's just, you know, like, you just need him around, make yourself valuable. Become the merch guy. Merch is not that difficult. Become the person that does the bookings. Become the person that, when y'all go to a city, you find out who got the money to do features. Like, don't just be the guy that's rolling weed and the homeboy. Like, it's so weird. Like, y'all like to get taken care of by a grown man. Like, I hate that. It's like, it annoys me because I'm, like, running around working and they just be looking at me like, so you're not going to help? You're not going to... He's asking for something. He needs to go to a shoe store. Can you call? Can you do something? Like, don't be that guy. Please do not be the homeboy. We don't like those. But
there's not a lot of... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go, go.
I was just going to say, like... Once you realize that somebody is not adding value to your team, sometimes you gotta let them go. And I think that's for anybody, even an executive. Like, sometimes it's time to let people go. So if you're not able to build and grow with me in whatever field I'm in, you shouldn't be in my life. I'm sorry. I think we're too grown. I'm trying to get some money this year. Cut them off. It's okay. They won't be mad. That probably will motivate them to get their hustle on.
Yep.
But I'm stop the homeboy shit.
Yeah, because it's not a lot of people like Ib that manages
J.
Cole
too.
Or like I'll bring it back to like Wiz Khalifa with Will or
even Meg's late mom, Meg Thee Stallion's mother, who was very important in her career.
Or Drake with Future the Prince or Mac Miller with Q or Currency with Musa. Like, it's certain artists that do have that day one manager that's been with them since day one, had their back since day one, stayed on the journey since day one, and maybe they grew the team a little bit and added people to handle different things, but they still got that day one manager. That's rare. And if you, like, I see Blizzy here, like, G-Eazy with Matt Bowerschmidt and Jamil, like, him too. Like, it's a lot, there's a few artists that do have that, but if your manager right now ain't giving you that dedication, like, their whole life is about your career, you gotta just go.
Agreed. And I'll add to that, I think what both Bareline and Tarik are saying is always say to artists, you know, it starts with self-transparency. And then the team has to be transparent. And, you know, all the clients I work with, I'm straight up with them. Like, you know, I'm not afraid to, you know, get fired because I'm being honest about where an artist is at. And if I get fired, cool. You know, God bless them. At least when I go to sleep at night, I was telling them the right thing to do at the end of the day. And I think all the managers that you mentioned, they've all been transparent with their artists. And it hasn't been the hype machine and, like, you know, lying to them, yes, man, because that don't work. That ends. Because the reality sets in when you talk about festivals, when you talk about shows, when there's nobody in the room to see you, you know, somebody's got to tell you, yo, we got work to do. We're not there. You thought you were hot. You thought because you got however many followers, that shit is cap a lot of times, just because, you know, we know streams and you can buy followers and you can do all that stuff. At the end of the day, it's about the, it starts with the music. You know, you got to connect with people and you got to build on that. And it's, again, it goes back to being transparent. Both the artist has to be with themselves and the team has to be transparent with the artist. You know, and those are tough conversations sometimes, but necessary.
Rob, when is the right, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, like, it's important to have a strong team. Like, you don't see what your manager does all day. I'm sorry. You don't, the artists don't see you on emails and calls and all of that, but you need to have value in your team. I feel like a lot of artists, they do not value their team, and it's kind of sad. Like, I've seen how some artists treat their management, and it's kind of like, how dare you? Like, you don't even know. And sometimes I've seen when an artist blows up, they, like, leave their manager that was there from day one for, like, these high-name brand management companies. And it's like, they don't even give a fuck about you, like that person that was there with you from day one. So I think it's important to value your team, respect the people that are helping you, and just, like, don't go Hollywood and shit when you blow up. That shit is right. Whack, too. Like, yeah, getting these big-name managers, they don't even care about you. They're just trying to use you. Stick with your team, build with your team, and take it to the top with your team.
Yeah. Especially because, like, it's funny because we came full circle on that, right? Because we were talking about, like, ditch them if they're not working. But at the same time, when you hit success, don't ditch them because the one that been working just because, mm-hmm. Scooter Braun.
Hey, man,
I like your shit. I got a $1 billion company. Let me sign you. Guess what? He don't give a fuck about you, period. Like, you got to build together.
Got to have skin in the game, you know, and that's it. You know, until, you know, it becomes transactional when artists get to a certain level and big managers come in. And, you know, sometimes I have artists come to me and say, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, you don't know, to Bearline's point, you don't know what so-and-so does. Like, you can't, you know, their relationship may start growing apart for whatever reason, just because that artist is moving around and that whole thing and being creative, but they don't really know what that manager is doing, and they're fighting for them every single day to get to the top. And that journey, once you get to that place of you're selling out arenas and you're doing that kind of business, the look back of having that team that's been with you from day one is something that you'll never, you know, it's just an incredible feeling. To have. So to Bearline's point, don't go Hollywood, you know, when you get there. Like, remember, it starts with the team.
With Tark, when does the homeboy manager eventually sometimes turn into the tour manager?
I mean, all right, so I've been the homeboy manager, mm-hmm. in the sense that, like, I am the homeboy manager. Let me rephrase. Anybody I manage is my friend first, right? And guess what? By default, early in my career, I was the tour manager. I was the Sprinter van driver. I was the production manager. I was carrying the merch in. I was setting up the production on stage. I was doing it all. So and with all those managers that we just mentioned, I know for a fact they've all done all this stuff before they got to a place where they had the budget to delegate, right? Delegating just comes naturally by necessity. At first, it's like, I'm Will with Wiz, and it's just like, yo, I got to do as much as I can with this little budget. And then he starts getting paid more. You're like, I can't handle this shit. I got to pay people. So the homie manager becoming tour manager or becoming, like, real deal manager really just happens out of necessity, out of a need to, like, there's more roles to fill, and organically your boy or your it doesn't have to be a boy, a woman friend or whatever it is.
Threading the needle there, yeah.
Wrong thing. But yeah. Another person can go from just being somebody that really cares about you, yeah. that you know has a good head on their shoulders, and they naturally are the type of person to go take responsibility, take things into their own hands, help you succeed, and be just smart enough naturally to know, like, hey, we need to start getting some help around here, because I'm getting a little, I only got two hands, one brain, you know? So
And I think the key to what you just said, Tariq, is a takeaway for everybody is no ego. There's no ego in anything he just said. It wasn't that the, you know, tour manager became the manager because he or she is pounding their chest saying, well, I've done all this, so I should just be the manager. No, it comes from a place of like, you know, getting busy, more responsibilities, more roles, so I need to move into that place. And if you take ego out, and that's a big thing, as we all sit on this stage, you know, from the artist on sometimes the team, and sometimes if you got somebody in your camp where their ego's gotten out of control, they might have to get cut because now you're putting your ego before the vision of the business of what the goal is that, you know, the team is trying to accomplish. And I've seen people lose their jobs that way. And it sucks because they were with that artist from the beginning, but then they let the things going on around them, the experience of this artist growing and getting bigger that they thought sometimes they were the artist, you know, or,
oh man,
you know, that shit right there, like, is just, you know, a recipe for a disaster.
So we're about to get into some questions from y'all. So if you could just start queuing up right behind the mic over there, make sure you keep your questions short and don't use this as a time to introduce yourselves to them. But before we, because you're asking for everybody here. But before we do that, I want y'all to speak to yourselves maybe 10 years ago, because there are some people that want to be in each one of your shoes. So what would you say, starting with you, Rob, what would you say to yourself when you're starting out? What are some things like, hey, watch out for this, or don't do this, or keep doing this?
I'll say, you know, I would be up here all day kind of sharing my journey, but I go back to enjoy the journey, right? I appreciate every single job from the beginning to interning to side jobs to pay bills to stay in the business and be an assistant and go to the mailroom and all those different things that I had to do in that journey of my growth over time, and just never lose sight of the journey. But in that too is, you know, being patient, knowing that it's never going to happen when you want it to happen. If you think that that's how it works, it don't work that way. And again, when you look back, you're going to appreciate every thing that you've done, both the ups and the downs of your path to success and whatever that is. But it starts with patience. It starts with being humble, honest, and loyal. You know, those are the things I could share.
Tariq?
I'm going to try to, because I'm a concert producer, so but I'm going to try to make this applicable to artists, which I think it is because it's product, right? So it's like step one in the journey is like you need to make the best product you can. You will have opportunities in the future to make version 2 of that product, version 3 of that product. So it's like, for me, it was like Rolling Loud 1, Rolling Loud 2, Rolling Loud 3, you know, every time I got to make it better, right? With, it's like your first album, your second album, your third. Make that first single, that first album, whatever it is, that first music video, whatever it is, do your best to make that first product with whatever resources you have. And with that, build the team. Your best you can with the resources you have. Put together a plan. Market to the people that you already have fucking with you. If it's nobody, you got some work to do. You need to do some relationship building in your local community. You want to, a goal eventually needs to be for people to know who you are. You need to come up with a strategy to get people to give a fuck about who you are. And the strategy is not cold DMing people. I did not sell Rolling Loud tickets early on by cold DMing people, hey, you want to come to my festival? Like, it's like you don't cold DM me and be like, hey, I want to perform at Rolling Loud, check me out. That's not the way. You need to come up with a strategy to get myself or people around me's attention, or that doesn't even matter. Get fans' attention. Create something. Create a product and get it to people. Find out what type of people fuck with your shit. Like, there's all types of different people in this room right now, right? Like, that, like, all types of different rap, or maybe not even like rap. Think you're gonna start. There's like identifiable fan bases for different styles of rap, right? There's backpack rap, hood. There's all these types of rap, right? You can fucking identify your fan base, market to those type of people, do the best you can with your product. And build, just build. Do better with the next thing than you did with the last thing. If you do that, you're gonna win. It's simple science.
Paralyn? Yeah.
I'm still doing it, what I wanted to do. I just keep hustling, like, keep hustling. Don't let nobody tell you no. And when they tell you no, you just smile and keep hustling and keep working and keep working and don't ever get comfortable. I don't care who you are. I know you ain't comfortable, right? You ain't comfortable either. We're trying to stay hot, you know, because we like rappers too. We got to stay hot, motherfucker. So, you know, keep hustling. Just don't let nobody tell you no. Man, can't nobody tell me no no more. I'm like, all right, bet, cool. And I'm going to go do it because, you know, just keep hustling.
Can we have a huge round of applause for our panel? We don't have too long for questions, so, you know, make them direct. Like I said, don't introduce yourself to them now, you know, but try to help everybody else in the room that maybe can't ask a question themselves, all right? First up.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief. Thank you all very much for the panel. It was very encouraging for me to hear a lot of what y'all said. And I was just wondering, as a self-managed artist, you know, I'm doing my best, obviously, to do what y'all are suggesting in terms of building something that other people are compelled to come to me for. But I guess, what is your advice as I start to try to build a team to find those people who are enthusiastic, who are going to stay with you, who are going to be a manager that's really fighting for you rather than just somebody who's trying to get a piece?
Paralyn, you want to take that?
I think you should find out who's in, where are you from?
Los Angeles right now.
Well, that's the perfect city to be from because I feel like music is big there and everybody wants to work in the music scene. So just find out who's the next hottest producer. Like, look at hashtags or who you follow on Instagram. Find out who's the next hottest producer, engineer, photographer, everybody, and just build the team. Find people that are as hungry as you are. Find people that want to work hard. Because when I was coming up, I knew who the interns and this and that. How old are you? 27. Who is in your circle or whoever that's coming up that still wants to work in music? So just find out the people that want it as bad as you, and I'm sure they'd be willing to work for free or do whatever you need them to do.
Also, like, I really like self-managed artists. Like, I think, like, man, if you got the headspace for it, if you get as much as you can handle it at first, that just means you're in control. So, like, if you're able to separate your creative time from your business creative time, because a lot of the business in management is actually creative, like thinking of these marketing ideas and all this type of stuff, like you're just like at an advantage. You got 100% of your pie right now. So like, and I don't want to we got more questions, but like if you don't got a lot of friends I'm just assuming you don't have the friends that are willing to be this manager for you, so you're kind of like, yo, I'm trying to find some. Yeah, they're doing their thing. They're not really trying to be a part of your thing yet. Just keep working on don't be so concerned with like, I need a manager. Just keep working on that product and keep working the steps that you know you need to work. That the manager thing gonna work itself out. Like somebody will emerge that fucks with you, that got motivation to be your manager. I promise you.
Next up.
Hi, from one woman artist manager to another, there have been people who are already embedded with an artist that I work for who are just dicks. And they just are.
Send them my way.
So my question is, like, especially when it's a good friend of the client who's just a misogynist and, you know, like, won't pay because you're the one asking him to pay instead of the client. Like, have you dealt with, what's your experience?
Nobody wants to pay these days. It's kind of crazy. People don't want to pay the people that work for them. Something weird. But I would say, as a woman, I'm actually launching a clothing line with Good American at the end of the month that when you walk in the room, it says female CEO, powerful fucking woman. You better own that shit. You better stand on business and let them know how you feel. I think with being a woman, I come off as she's so mean or she's a bitch or this and that. It's like, no, I'm just a powerful woman. I'm going to stand my ground. And you can't beat me. So I think that it's not about being a woman. Let's not make it about being a woman. Just let's make it about getting what you need done and handled. And if you need to get something handled, then people are not taking, you need to pull the artist aside and be like, this is not working off of me. I feel uncomfortable. This is how it should be handled. Or can you take the control of the situation? Because if I ever have, if the artist fucks with you and you tell them that, they're going to go holler at them and be like, yo, don't treat her like that. Like, you are just better than anybody else, men or women. I don't like to do that thing so much, but people treat people good. I think it'll take you a long way. People, one thing, one advice besides this, When I was coming up in the industry, it was so many people that shitted on me. Peter, you know, you was at Def Jam. I was in that motherfucking table. I was an intern. People did not want to hire me, nothing. They got to come see me now, and I remember how they made me feel. So what I'm telling you is, make sure you treat everybody with respect. You know, you don't got to like everybody. Don't get me wrong. But you always treat people with respect and be kind. Because as you go up, they coming down. And as you come down, you're going to have to see people too. So make sure y'all treat everybody with respect. I think that's the biggest thing in the music industry. Be nice to people. Be kind. This is like, everybody wants to be the big dog. Just be good to people.
Don't be a dick.
My bad. I want, part of respect is what she's standing on. Like, you got to be able to stand on what you, like, what your side of the table is. Like, you'll be more respected in any part of the music business when you can defend why you're saying no. Like, I'm saying no to you right now for this reason. Or you need to pay me for this reason. If you want me to be, this is the reason, and this is the upfront, blah, 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 blah. And if you don't respect that, peace. That's it.
Scan your crown.
Yeah, you can go.
Perfect. Thank you. So I'm going to be as brief as I can, but kind of like I'm a geek, work with AI, and kind of just stumble into music. So literally I'm starting from like nothing. And a lot of the things I'm doing could serve as a platform, but I wanted to ask you advice I think could be useful for everyone, which is, if you're literally just starting off, what are the best advice that you've seen that has worked for people to build relationships, be it at the level of like people for management, be it at a fan level, be it at people at venues? Like, what is just like basic piece of advice for someone starting off? If you could like go all the way back and tell someone like they're just getting started, do these 3-4 things.
Rob, can you take it? Because I feel like, you know, the agency side is cutthroat.
Yeah, I mean, so are you an artist or a manager or?
I'm an artist.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, listen, I think it's really, you know, starting in your hometown, you know, regionally building. You got to call, go down and go to local venues, you know, in your area, in your region, and start to meet those people, right? And start to build a relationship with, you know, the buyers there in the market. Find out if there are some young or cool producers or writers or, you know, just people that are in your region to connect with and build with. I think we've kind of said that a couple times here on the panel. You know, that's where, to Bearline's point, like, people don't want to work nowadays, and that's what it is, man. You got to go in there, you got to grind, you got to meet everybody, you got to shake hands, kiss babies, you got to do all that stuff. You know, to really build a team, and finding young people that are interns at a local college that want to be in the music business, and you share your music with them, and they're like, oh, I love it. And then the kid is in photography, and yo, he becomes your photographer for free, you know, as an intern, is taking pictures or documenting stuff. You know, it's just building those relationships and just finding people that are passionate. You know,
who's in this room too? Like, who's next to you? You don't know who's next to you.
Y'all should all be networking after this.
Sure.
Like, and not just networking,
right?
Like, meet each other, ask each other some direct where you live, what do you do? Oh, I do this. You might find that manager today. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially because there's gonna definitely be a cue to like meet y'all, but maybe the person that's gonna help you the most is sitting right next to you. You know? Let's get the next question.
Thank you guys, first of all. I'm an artist. I love to make like a wide variety of music. I do pop, synth pop, but I also like to rap. How important do you think it is for newer artists to stay consistent when it comes to the features they're doing and singles? And how do you think that changes as an artist kind of levels up in their career?
Are you asking about consistency in the sound, like varying between the genres? Or are you talking about consistency of the timing of the releases?
I'm talking about sound and genres.
There are certain artists where their brand is like to touch a bunch of genres. Like, what's that fucking guy that... Damn, I'm forgetting his name. He's not a rapper, but he does like the whatever. But it's some famous YouTube dude, and he'll do like all the different genres, right? And that's his brand, right? It's like being so versatile. But that's almost like a gimmick to me. Like, for me, it's like I think you should have your periods of as an artist. So it's like for a period of time you're in a certain sound, and then you evolve into your next sound, and you kind of like, I don't know.
No, agree. I think you have to create an identity as a new artist. Like, who are you? And you know, to both Tarek and Bearline's point, is like there's a ton of artists out here every day. What separates you? You know, if you're just making a bunch of different things that are all over the place, how are you gonna kind of zero in on an audience that, you know? So if that's rap that, you know, is really something you want to focus on that. And then to Tarek's point, evolve to the next thing. And, you know, your next album, once you've built a foundation, a fan base, to say, okay, I'm ready to, you know, expand my sound. I think we know the great Kanye West has done that over his career. You know what I mean? 808 and Heartbreaks, like, people heard that and like, yo, what the fuck? Like,
you think about, you know, Kanye's, I mean, music, like, now versus, yeah, Graduation.
Exactly. Like, there's growth, there's time. But again, not trying to push everything in one moment, one time. It takes time. So you got to create an identity, I think.
And you could plan that in advance. You know, yep, what I mean? Like, you can kind of, and it, you be ready for the plan to change, but it's like maybe you decide, all right, I'm going to stick with this right, yep, now, and it's going, I think they're going to, that'll evolve naturally into this one, right? So it's like, no. Thank you.
Next question, but I just want to say 808s and Heartbreak is Kanye's most influential album, and I'm willing to die on that hill. yeah. No.
All right, thank you guys. We talked a lot about like building a brand, and also talked about like mistakes, and oftentimes people make mistakes if they're trying to build their brand. I own a music platform, and we had Tory Lanez on earlier, and he had the whole issue go down, and you know, he talked a bit about DaBaby, and I'm curious, like, if an artist does something that maybe doesn't look so good, how do you go about like changing your brand, and how is that different than like building your brand from the ground up?
Good question.
The artist changing their brand or associated companies?
No, I care more about the artist.
Okay.
I mean, I think everybody makes mistakes. I mean, DaBaby was a real touchy one, and it happened at Rolling Loud. And Tyra could have been like, fuck you, you ain't never going to be on this show again. And he stood his ground, and he kept him on the show. Like, he didn't have to do that, because let me tell y'all something. When that situation happened, I was like, damn. And they were like, nah, we're going to stand. We're going to stand here with you. And T.T. Torres was another person that did it with Summer Jam. And it's like, you know,
Shout out to T.T.
Like, you got to, like, everybody makes mistakes, and I think it's okay. And I don't think people will ever become their best selves if they don't make mistakes. So just keep working and doing the work. Like, I know that DaBaby probably felt at the moment like, damn, this is hard. I give up. I could just go ghost. And he didn't. He's still dropping music. And this is the industry where one day you get blackballed and people don't like you, and then the next day they love you. So it's just like, stay true to yourself and keep working, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes. I probably made a mistake every week. It's okay. I'm going to keep working. I don't think you should dwell on your mistakes.
All right. Next person. Yeah,
appreciate your honesty.
How y'all doing? I'm a rapper, hip-hop artist. So I remember, Rob, you were saying that if your manager isn't fully invested all their time into your career, that you should drop them. But if you're starting off,
I'm trying to understand your question a little bit. So you're saying that, because I'm saying dropping somebody who is not, you know, doing the work or passionate about it. You know, people have to live. So if your manager is working a part-time job but also managing you, you have to, you know, you guys have to have a transparent conversation with one another on, is the work getting done? What do we need to do? We're building something. Things cost money. You know, money don't just fly out the sky. So, you know, that manager may be dipping in his or her pocket to, you know, contribute to your career and your growth. And so it's, you know, a matter of you knowing in your gut, and you're going to know in your gut if this person is really fighting for you every day. And then on the flip side, you know, them holding you accountable. Are you doing the work? Are you doing what you're supposed to do in a studio, creating music, you know, creating great music? You know, all of those things, you know, play hand in hand. So I think every situation is different, and it's not, you know, it's going to be hard as you're building to just find some manager that's just out there with a bunch of money that just, you know, don't have other things going on to, you know, help support your career. So, you know, you just gotta, you know, work through that situation. But if you feel as though they're not, you know, contributing or really working hard and they're just sitting back and saying they're a manager, yeah, you probably want to let them go because they're not doing shit, you know, so.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Really quickly, with respect to the previous question, coming at it from the journalist side about artists that make mistakes, I do believe if an artist does make a mistake, it is important for them to have real restitution and to understand why people are mad at what they did and to actually make earnest efforts to at least mediate what they did.
100%.
Because, like, you know, as someone that's covered it, you know, I see a lot of artists get all mealy mouth about it and they just disappear and they come back. But it's like people do remember and like fans do kind of fall off of that. But when they do, but they do also take notice about when you try to say, hey, I fucked up and I'm really trying to change that.
I mean, you know, one of my, may he rest in peace, one of my greatest artist friends, XXXTentacion, like he had a very troubled beginning of his career where he made mistakes and, you know, had to really change himself. But he did that fully in the face of his fans, totally, like started fully, totally changed how he's communicating with his fans and how he was as himself, as a person. He went from anger, rage, literally, look at me. That was the name of the single. That was his whole thing. Fuck or fight or whatever I got to do, look at me, right? And it transformed into like, yo, I'm going to be way more peaceful. I'm going to tone it down. I'm going to spread positivity. Like, I think anybody's capable. Like, if you're a free person on this planet, I believe you have the capacity to change.
And it was a beautiful album that he put out.
Exactly.
If we have the next question.
So, from Austin, currently working as a manager. I manage four artists and also throw my own shows. We just do our first show called the Hip Hop Hall of Fame. It's a great success. I know there's a lot of work that needs to be built to establish the foundation further. But when it comes time to go on tour, what advice would you recommend touring outside of just the city?
I would say keep going locally a little bit and do while you're doing your local stuff, apportion some of your day to be doing like online marketing, to be networking with people that are in different cities, and get to fucking LA, and get to New York, and get to Chicago, and get to Miami. You get to like those four cities right now, and if you can get to overseas, fucking amazing, right? But if you can start with, and you don't even got to do Miami or Chicago right now. If you can just get to LA, New York, not even so much right now, but get to LA and New York right now and meet with people. If you have a concrete thing that you could say, hey, my artist sold out this show in Austin, this many people, right? That's a snippet that is, it turns that cold DM or that cold email into actually like a reason for why I should read it, right? So instead of being like, hey, pay attention to me for no reason, here's a link. I'm like, no, here's a concrete reason. I did this thing. This video got this many views, this many comments, or I sold this many tickets. Like, give them that concrete thing, and you'll start network building relationships outside of your city.
We're going to make the next question the last question, unfortunately, because we're running out of time. But, yeah.
Bring it home, my boy. You're the last one. Everybody looking at you.
A lot of pressure.
What you got?
First, I want to say thank you for y'all's time. I'm an artist from Austin. So, what would you say is the best way to get your attention for an artist that's kind of like in the middle ground, like you're building a fan base, but nothing's gone like viral? What would you say, but they have like incredible music. What would you say would be the best way to get y'all's attention or attention of people of y'all's stature?
First of all, keep going. Just because it didn't go viral yet doesn't mean you don't keep going. If you are getting feedback from the people that are seeing it and they're telling you it's fire, keep going. The next song might hit. The one after that might hit. If you might need to identify what it is you're doing with the record. So are you putting in some money for, do you have PR? Do you have digital marketing? Do you have any ancillaries around you, people pushing your shit? You got all, check those things off. Okay, maybe you got to think of a way to make the music video a little more catchy, you know, so like something to like catch people's fucking attention. but don't let the viral shiny shit distract you, man. Like, you don't gotta go viral to be successful. Like, it takes a minute to have the real success. Like, I don't know if Brent Faiyaz has ever gone viral, per se. But that motherfucker is a multimillionaire, making money on his own terms, owns his masters, can tour massive venues. You know what I'm saying? Like, flip side, an artist like Russ sometimes goes viral just for work, just for having worked the steps so well. And now look at him, right? Got great music and independent fan base, and he's very transparent about that. So you just got to keep going, but make sure you're being honest with yourself if it's really fire. Like, is your fan base that you currently have, the people that are seeing your shit, reacting that it's fire? Then great. Then just keep going and just keep getting better at spreading it. If the views are going up each time, you're on the right track.
Patience and transparency, I think, you know, goes. I think we're in a time, you know, just this generation, especially young artists, of like the instant gratification. That's what, you know, this world is right now, and that's not, you know, necessarily a real thing. You got it takes time. You got to put the work in. You have to build, and it's not, going back to what I said earlier, it's not going to happen when you want it to happen. So it's just a matter of keep on chipping away at it, and it'll grow, and you'll see it. And someone just put a quote up I had heard recently, and they said, you know, have you ever heard a tree grow? And it's like, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. You know what I mean? Like, damn, nobody's ever heard a tree grow. But you've seen it. You know, and you've seen it, and it takes time, and it gets stronger, and it gets bigger, and it, you know, it's like, man, that's amazing. You know what I mean? When you think about that. And I think it goes back to that at the end of the day. Stay on track.
I got another one for you. You worked 10 years to blow up overnight.
Yeah. What I was going to say also is, like, you don't want a quick hit. I think this is the era of quick hits and these TikTok records. Sometimes I go on TikTok and I listen to a song, and then when I go on Apple and listen to the whole song, it'd be trash. I'm like, I guess it was only that little piece, but what I'm saying is, like, build a body of work. Build good music. You want all your music to be good, because what happens is that sometimes these artists may get signed to a major label, get all this money. These labels are giving them all this money, and then they can't make another record. And it's like, do you want to be that guy that has this big success and then you don't have nothing else to provide? You don't want to be that guy. I've seen them perform live, too, and nobody else knows any other song. So you don't want to be that guy. So just keep hustling. Everybody keep hustling. Thank you for inviting us. This is the man right here.